Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. Welcome to the program from San Francisco to God knows where, a third largest show in the United States of America. I'm glad you're listening. The phone number, of course, is 1-800-449-8255. There are some big stories out there, and they're financial. For example, auto, big three auto in decline, Honda on the way up. Now, on the face of it, I would say put tariffs on cars imported into the United States, and I've said this before. What I don't understand is why the unions don't back this move. Now, many of you will say, well, it proves the American manufacturer doesn't know what he's doing. I'd rather be able to buy a cheap Japanese car that's more fuel efficient and all of that. I've heard that argument before. But the fact of the matter is that the Japanese destroyed our electronics industry in the 1970s by dumping electronics on our shores that were not any better than the electronics being made here by Sylvania, for example. And they destroyed our electronics industry through a form of trade that was really piracy. They destroyed our industry through unfair trade. And, of course, they had first done their groundwork, and that was to buy off as many of our Congress people as they could for less money than they pay for a good prostitute in Geneva. And then after they bought off the prostitutes in Washington, they destroyed the electronics industry. Right now, the Japanese are out to destroy our auto industry. Now, I would say let's turn to the president, but we know who he is. He's an oil president. He works for the Seven Sisters. Occasionally, he'll do a little work for the American people, so long as it doesn't interfere with his work for the Seven Sister Oil Companies. We understand that. So who are you going to turn to, Obama? Why don't you ask Obama what he would do to save the American oil industry, all of you morons? You think he's any different? How can you fools not see what's going on here? So, okay, yeah, tariffs, good luck. Then you'll hear the schmucks like the golfer tell you, well, that's free trade, that's the free market. And you people buy it up. I mean, you're like gullible. Now, speaking of the golfer, he signed, they say, a $400 million deal, which I say hats off to him. God bless him, because a rising sea raises all ships, and that's good for me. So, therefore, I'm happy for him. But it leads to another question. How could Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway be down 20%. How could the big auto industries be down almost to the point of down and out? Warren Buffett, you know, he is the richest man in the world, and they say that he suffered his worst first quarter, his worst first half since 1990. His stock is down 20%. We have oil at $144 a barrel. The government will not step in and do anything about it when they have the power to do so. Absolutely do they have the power to do so. You want me to give you the answers? I'll give it to you for the 50,000th time. Take oil from Iraq. We spent almost $1 trillion, not to mention the human cost, to liberate those people in Iraq, those wonderful, wonderful and grateful people in Iraq who are killing Christians. And what, they don't have to pay you back? Who ever heard of this? Who ever heard of liberating a nation and then not asking them to pay you back? It's so corrupt, it's unbelievable. I could drive the price of oil below $100 a barrel in 90 days just by starting to pump the oil out of Iraq onto ships and bringing it to America to pay back the war debt. Now, what about our dear friends south of the border? They have one of the largest oil reserves in the world in Mexico. Why can't they pump it to us? You don't even need ships for that one. No ships. No, sir. Just pump it. Truck it. Truck it right into America. Pay us back for the cost of the illegal aliens. This is what a sane government would do. So how come I, a talk show host, knows what to do to straighten out the economy when our leaders don't know? Can you explain that to me? So, okay, so we have oil. We have Warren Buffett. We have the big three. And then we have a talk show host who signs a deal for $400 million, they say. And it shatters broadcast records, which is wonderful. I couldn't be in a better business at a better time. And it's the greatest business to be in if you have a mind and a voice and a heart. And I've been in it long enough to understand that I'm now in the driver's seat, which I've known for a long time. But for a while now, I've been telling you that terrestrial radio is going to make a huge comeback. How long has it been? 1 year that I've said to you, XM and Sirius. They are not going to go anywhere, and I told you the reasons why. I mean, why would you turn on XM and Sirius to listen to a balloon man who may as well be defecating through a microphone? Is that what you really think you should spend your time doing? Listening to a lunatic who belongs in Creedmoor State Hospital making pornographic images out of balloons? That's what you should turn on XM and Sirius for? Huh? Those are Brazilian. Oh, those are panties. Hey, she's a lesbian. Oh, lesbian. Some panties, Brazilian. Lesbian, Brazilian panties. That's XM and Sirius together. So now you have Limbaugh, who appeals to the Republicans, not the conservatives in America. And there must be an awful lot of Republicans in America, not that many conservatives, in the sense that he has a very large audience of Republicans. I can't believe any conservatives would listen to him and not see through it, because he represents and mimics the Republican Party line. Now, if you're a Republican, good luck to you. I'm not a Republican. I'm an independent conservative. I've been registered as an independent for 20 years. So I didn't just invent my designation in order to sell a radio show. But that leads to a question. Does Limbaugh's deal show that I was right about the power of terrestrial radio? Answer, of course, yes. Do you begrudge ultra-high celebrity compensation this much in these difficult times? I don't. I don't, because I'm in the driver's seat, so why should I begrudge it? It shows you there's something wrong with the thinking in the media. For example, we hear newspapers are in decline. Advertising is down. Well, if newspapers are dying and their advertising is down, how do you explain that radio advertising is not down? Well, it's down slightly in some regards, but it must not be down that bad if they can afford $40 million a year for a talk show host. How do you explain this? Can anyone figure this one out? Then there's another couple of stories. We have a local mayor here in San Francisco named Tusim Newsom, Annie Tusim Newsom, who is so out of touch with reality that not only does he think homosexual marriage will carry him to the governorship of California, but to the presidency itself. Why? Because he looks in the mirror and he sees a cute boy. And he says, if I see a cute boy, why the world sees a cute boy? And all we need is a cute boy to run not only California, but America. But here is a mayor who is not only enmeshed in the greatest homicide debacle in the history of the city. We have an out-of-control homicide rate. Now a scandal has emerged where the city has been paying to shield Honduran crack dealers. And he says it's not my problem, it's the court's problem. Then we have a district attorney in the city who he could fire in a second, Camila Harris. The same affirmative action district attorney who last week, it was seen, had released an illegal immigrant on a gun charge 3 months ago. A gun, by the way, that was later found to have been involved in two homicides. And that same felon allegedly killed a father and two sons last week. This guy, Newsom, wants to run for the governorship? That's a story, is it not? Then there's, of course, another story that you can call michaelsavage.com about, and that is the black national anthem, so-called. I really didn't know there was a black national anthem. I didn't know there was a black nation inside the nation called the United States of America. But apparently there's a black national anthem that I never heard of, and some really talentless singer sang it at I believe it was in Denver, Colorado. Let me find the story. A singer at the Denver State of the City Council meeting got up and sang what she calls the black national anthem, and the white schmucks there said nothing. Let us begin not with her singing, but listen to the moron mayor of Denver in clip 22.
She said that there was only herself, her husband, and her musical mentor were the only three people in that room that knew that she was going to do this hybrid combination of both songs together. That was as surprised as anybody. I assumed that she was going to go into the Star Spangled Banner immediately when she finished. We fully attended and asked her to sing the Star Spangled Banner.
Could you do a rendition of the national anthem?
I probably should have.
Well, let's hear how this talentless performer spat in America's face in clip 21.
Facing the rock. Desi.
I turn her off. American Idol, she lasts 3 seconds. Radio, 1 second. Talentless hack. But it didn't stop her from singing the Black National Anthem. Now, the question I would ask you is what? What can I ask you? What, do we have another traitor? I guess the question to ask you is this. Should the mayor have stepped in and said, hold it, that's out of bounds, I'm not going to permit that? Sure, if he was me. I would have turned the microphone off and taken the consequences and thrown her out on a keister. The question is, will that woman who sang the Black National Anthem be the woman that Obama uses if, God forbid, he should be inaugurated as the President of the United States? And will that become the anthem of the United States of America? I'll be right back. Savage. So here I am talking about a collapsing economy, a booming radio economy, the big three going out of business because the government won't step in and put tariffs on Japanese cars in particular because of their rapacious marketing of Japanese cars. They're going to drive out the auto industry just the way they destroyed the electronics industry. And on the TV, you turn on CNN right now, Colombia hostages. You know, I don't even know who these hostages are, why this is a major story. What is this story about Colombia? Why? Why is everything out of this Big Brother always distracting us from reality? Here we have a city like San Francisco, one of the most beautiful places on earth, which is a liberal hellhole. The streets are filthy, bums, dirt, illegal aliens. It looks like you're living. You've got to really be careful in this city right now. You've got a city calling itself a sanctuary city, which Nancy Pelosi was involved with. Dianne Feinstein is a senator, so-called, when she's not doing business with China for the family biz. You got Barbara Baxter. They do nothing about a sanctuary city. You got Honduran crack dealers running wild in the streets. And when the cops catch them, the mayor pays to have them housed at $7,000 a month, and this jerk now wants to be governor. I don't understand this. I don't know what. I didn't think the people were this stupid, even liberals. I thought even liberals have a sense of survival. But I'm coming to believe that not only is liberalism a mental disorder, it's a suicidal mental disorder. That was the missing word in my best-selling book. 1-800-449-8255. MichaelSavage.com is the website. Honda grows while U.S. auto industry falters. Young illegal immigrants lose their San Francisco sanctuary. No, not quite. He cried Allah Akbar and hit the gas. And that's a heck of a story. One of the Palestinian peace lovers got on a caterpillar or a bulldozer and killed a number of people. I guess he was just filled with rage from oppression. He couldn't take his oppressors anymore. So, that's what happens when you're an oppressed people. You know, that's the way the libs pose. Buffett's Berkshire has worst first half since 1990, slumped 20% since December. I mean, it's not going to affect his lifestyle. You know, I have a wealthy friend that, you know, if he loses a lot of money, he says it's not going to affect my life one way or the other. Which is true, and you really think about it. You know, we all fight for money every day of our lives, but at a certain point, it doesn't matter plus or minus whatever you make. You're not going to change. You know, a man once told me, let me put it another way. I remember we were 15. I told you that. People like my family stories. So I'll give you one. Teenager, growing up, the men were always around. So we'd go to different houses and the fathers were around. My father was never around. He had to work 7 days a week in his store. We were never, you know, we were poor. We were just getting by. I mean, I don't mean poor. You know, I don't mean begging poor, but lower middle class, little attached house. God bless him. The house was clean and I never missed a meal. But my friend had a little, father was a little wealthier. They all started the same. His father owned a bar on the Upper East Side, I think. It was a nice upscale bar at the time. So his father was like Mr. Cool in a way. You know, he was like a movie star to us because he wore suits. Our fathers didn't. But his father was a tough guy. Used to be, you know, was a boxer. He was a street fighter who was really tough as nails, a great guy. And the boys naturally gravitated to the tough guy. They always do. Boys, I want to tell you, like tough men. They don't like wimps. And so we would hang around this guy's house, and his father would sometimes give us his philosophy. So I don't know what we were talking about, but he said, you know, a man only needs a certain amount of money. He said, just remember when you get older. He said, you can only wear one suit at a time, and you can only eat one meal at a time. I really didn't know what he was talking about. I mean, it was so logical to me that you could only wear one suit at a time, and that you can only eat one meal at a time, that I didn't even understand what he was saying. But as I've gotten older, I understood what he was saying, which is, why do you have to kill yourself to make more and more and more? How much is enough? At what point is enough enough? You know, I ask myself the same thing. I'm caught up in the rat race. I'm not lying to you. I would lie to you if I said I'm not caught up in the rat race. I mean, I like things. But I started out as a social worker, then as a teacher, and I've, you know, worked factory jobs. So, in other words, I'm kind of comfortable in certain ways at certain levels. It doesn't mean I'd like to live in a slum. Okay, let me start with that. I'm not Gandhi. I don't want to live in a slum. But at a certain point, what do you need? I mean, what actually do you need at a certain point, you know, is the whole point of that tale that I told you. 1-800-449-8255. Phone number, michaelsavage.com, website. I had a dream that I have to tell you about. I told you I've been sick for 24, 48 hours, 36 hours. I got to tell you this for a minute. I've been really, really like flu-like, headache, this, that. So I woke up this morning. I look in the mirror. My entire left buttock is bright red. No, I'm not telling you this for effect. So I said, oh, my God, what in the heck? Because it was hurting me in bed. Now, I know where I was last night. Let's start with that. I was in bed all night. I did not go to – I didn't sleepwalk. Now, how could my buttock, my left buttock, be bright red? And I have – it's very painful, and I have flu-like symptoms. The only thing I could figure out is it's an insect bite, right? I mean, that's a spider bite. Wouldn't it be same symptoms? So I had the housekeeper today, normally cleans the room. I said, look, do me a favor today. Let's take the mattress off and let's get under that bed. And with no spiders there, I mean, I live in a pretty clean house. I'm a little fanatic like my mother. I haven't reached the mothball stage yet. I'm an inch away from the mothballs in the closets. I know it's coming. Another year or two, that's it. The people won't be able to walk in my house. It'll be like a gas chamber. You went to my mother's house in Queens. You got hit with a mothball. In the summer, the windows were locked, and all you smelled were mothballs. But she lived to 88. Maybe she killed some. Who knows what the mothballs did? Every coat had mothballs in it. I haven't reached that stage yet, but it's actually starting to appeal to me. Maybe it kills spiders, too. Anyhow, here we are. It's summertime, and we can talk about the Black National Anthem, any Tewsome Newsome thinking he could be governor. Oil and Iran attack, whatever. What are you going to do? What do you really want to talk about here? I'll be back. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Yeah, it's a good business to be in right now. I mean, that's a great deal for Rush. I love it. $400 million. It's probably based partly on salary and partly on potential earnings by the best I can guess. But nevertheless, it's very good for everybody in the radio business. It couldn't come at a better time for everybody. But how could terrestrial radio be doing so well when we hear newspapers are in free fall? The auto industry is in free fall. How come talk radio is doing so well? Do you have an answer for that one? Audio libs? If television is in decline, why is conservative talk radio doing so well? I thought we rubes didn't buy anything. I thought we conservatives didn't consume anything. Only you liberals bought things. It seems to me the opposite is true. Seems to me people listen to shows like mine, buy the BMWs, buy the Mercedes, you know, buy the upscale cars and clothing and houses and stuff. And I think that a lot of, quote, liberals are really impoverished. We do know that the top of the liberal heap, like Nancy Pelosi, are out-and-out Stalinists or Leninists, however you want to put it, who want no democracy for the people. They want to impose democracy on the people, which is, of course, not democracy. It is an autocracy. That's why I called her Mussolini in a skirt. She wants to ban talk radio. Now, it's never going to happen. It would, even if they did it in Congress, it could be fought at the Supreme Court and we would win. The First Amendment supersedes the machinations of Mussolini in a skirt. So let them go and do their little games. They're going to lose at the end of the day. We're still going to have a First Amendment even after Nancy Pelosi and the gang in Congress gets through with us. We're going to get through with them because the country will survive even the tyranny of the Democrats. But why is it that there's money in talk radio, conservative talk radio, and no money in liberal talk radio? Air America, out of business. Liberal hosts die. No one listens to them. So, you know, in other words, it's not that we, it's not just that people in the conservative, on the Republican conservative side have an audience. It's that the audience buys things or else there would be no advertising. So if our audience buys things and liberal audiences don't buy anything, what does that tell you? And that explains why a guy like Obama could have traction. All the losers in America identify with him because they could see he's like them, a man who hates successful people. Although I don't believe it for a minute. I mean, he's quite successful because he's a phony. He's flip-flopped on virtually every issue. He doesn't stand for anything. His sign says change, but it really means the candidate that changes his mind. He says he's a candidate that stands for hope and change. He means he hopes you'll change along with him. He's changed his response to the Iranian nuclear issue more than once. He sounds more and more like Senator Kerry every day. They stick to nothing. He lies for votes. He's an unpatriotic candidate. And I finally see the change that Obama has been talking about for the last 2 years. He is becoming a typical politician right before our eyes, which means he's becoming himself, which means it's the portrait of Dorian Obama. That's for those of you who know what I'm talking about. So what's the point of taking your calls now? No, why is nobody calling about the $400 million deal in radio? I don't understand. I got calls on everything. The lines are jammed. You didn't read that on the Drudge Report and everywhere else? I don't get it. That's like major league entertainment news. You look up entertainment news on the websites and it says, that's in there. This is like Angela Jolie's children. Why is that a story? Angela Jolie is having more children. She reproduces like a mink, that woman. What is with her? It's, you know, there must be an illness in the psychological books about Angela Jolie, someone who can't get enough adoptees and can't seem to stop having babies. There's something wrong there. I'm telling you, it's starting to have a weirdness to it. And why is that a story? A woman has a baby. She's pregnant. Good. What are you telling me every day? 9 months to go, 8 months to go, 7 months to go. What PR garbage? They can sell anything to these hacks in the New York Post. The hacks in the New York Post will publish 8 months and 4 days left till Jolie's babies pop. 8 months and 3 days to go till Angela Jolie's babies are seen. 8 months and 2 days to go till Jolie's babies are out of the womb. What is wrong with these lunatics? No wonder newspapers are in decline with that kind of reportage. Look at this headline in the New York Post. A-Rod is here and B-Rod is there. That old shameful thing, Madonna is doing it with a baseball player while the baseball player's wife is in Paris doing it with a singer. I don't know. Who cares what they do? Good luck to them. Let them all diddle each other. Why do I have to read about it? Why? Because Murdoch owns the New York Post. What else would Leprechaun's boss publish? That's how he made his fortune. 1-800-449-8255. I don't know what you want to talk about. I have no idea what you really want to talk about. It's amazing to me. Good. One caller finally. Oh, my God. Look at this caller. Nick in New York. Go ahead, please.
Hey, Mike. Being from Connecticut, I know an awful lot about Lyme disease. I wonder if maybe you shouldn't get checked out for that with that bug.
Oh, my God. You think I got bit by a tick?
You have dogs. You live in the country. I have dogs, and I live in the country.
Oh, my God. I didn't think of it. God, that could be true because I did see a bite mark on my lower leg about a week ago. But would it emanate a week later with a redness on your buttock a week later?
Yeah, it could. It could. Yeah.
It could go up your leg like that?
Sure. The deer tick is a small tick, the one that carries the Lyme disease. It could have crawled up on
damn.
You wouldn't even know.
That's just what I need at this point in my life is Lyme disease. God. No, I have a small one-acre property on a hillside in addition to my regular house, and I grow fruit. I have a fruit orchard on it and a little pond with fish. And I come here to get away from it all. I got to tell you the truth. Every time I do, something goes – I get a bite of poison oak. Isn't nature wonderful? I'm better off with the crack dealers in San Francisco.
Oh, yeah, but if you get it checked out now, they'll knock it out of you. But you don't want to wait. I mean, you really need to get
it. All right, so they have to test for the antibodies, and then if they find it, then I go on antibiotics. I get it. I didn't think of it. That's a very good tip, Nick. Thank you very much. Now I'm going to check for Lyme disease now for July 4th. And I was going to have about six friends over for a barbecue, the hot dog. I cannot cook chicken on a barbecue. I've tried it over and over again. It sticks. It burns. It's the last thing to get cooked. But I have a trick the way I cook chicken at home anyway. First, Well, I told you, you have to kosher the chicken. I don't care if you're a Nazi, you have to kosher chicken first. That means you wash it thoroughly. And that means you then take salt, kosher salt or just sea salt, and put it all over the chicken parts. Let it sit for a few minutes in salt in the sink, clean sink. And then you immediately spray the salt off the body. The contact of the salt with the chicken kills most of the staph on the chicken. The salt is a very smart thing to do. Okay. So you have your salted washed chicken. What I then do is I microwave my chicken about halfway so the inside gets cooked. Then I will coat it up and barbecue it. Otherwise, it'll take forever and it doesn't cook inside. That's how I do it. But, you know, a friend went to a barbecue in the Hamptons a couple of years ago at a very important wealthy man's house, and he said they had the most exquisite foods on earth. And it was different lines for this foie gras and schmagru and that and the steak. He said the biggest line that wrapped around the estate was the line that led to the hot dog bar stand. Everyone wanted a hot dog. That's all anybody ever wants at a barbecue, is they really come for the roll and the hot dog and the mustard. And I like to put onions on the hot dog. I eat them once a year, that's all. It's a good opportunity to pig out. I can't wait now. I'm going to have it on Friday night. I'm going to have it around late in the day so that I can watch the fireworks in the Bay Area from the roof of my house. I'm tempted to go out on the boat, you know, to see the fireworks display, but it's very, very bad idea to do that. Three reasons. One, drunks in boats with running engines is not my idea of a pleasant moment. You know, 400, 500, 600 boats congregating around Alcatraz Island looking at the fireworks with their engines running. You're going to get a fume bath, number one. Number two, some moron's going to lie back into you. You have to watch every second. You can't drink. I mean, if I boat, I never drink. It's illegal, but I would never do it. You're talking about 20 tons of boat plus fuel and your friends on it. I mean, you don't want to drink if you're a sane person. So where's the fun? I mean, you're basically a bus driver on the water there. I mean, all I need is the carry hat. I should write short line on it. So I don't think so. I just do it at the house. Kansas City, Chris, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, yeah, I want to talk about Russia's big windfall profit.
Good.
You know, it's incredibly awesome. I actually was introduced into conservatism through Rush Limbaugh right out of my Greenpeace indoctrination out of college in 91. I was forced to listen to him because the 1973 Chevy step van I had to drive around only had AM radio. And little by little, over a few years...
But how do you... No, I'm glad he got that kind of payday. It's good for me, but I'm asking you something else, which is... What does that tell you about the radio economy as opposed to the newspaper and television economy? How could radio be so good while newspapers and television are collapsing? How do you explain that?
What I can tell you is because – well, I think the main reason is because most of the people who are listening to talk radio are guys who are working. I mean, we're working people out here. I mean, you drive around
– And you actually – and you buy things.
Yeah, we buy things.
Okay, and the liberals don't listen to talk radio because it's below them. They only listen to FM and NPR, and they buy nothing.
Oh, yeah, exactly. I believe that.
Well, no, that's not true. They don't buy nothing. They buy Obama's lies. Sorry, I was wrong about that. Thanks for the call. Now I have a headache again. I don't know. I could be in the hospital July 4th starts, and I'm starting to sound like an old – I can't take it. I mean, I didn't ask for this. Most people wouldn't be on the air today, yesterday, the way I felt. I was half dead. Then I woke up, it was like heat. I felt heat in my buttock. I said, am I imagining this? It was like hot, like an iron on my left buttock. I said, all night long, like an iron. I said, I'm imagining it's probably you. You got a fever. You're hallucinating. I wake up and look in the mirror. I look like somebody gave me a kick like a horse. I don't mean with the print, but it's red. And as I say to you, I don't sleepwalk. I wasn't down in a certain district of the city. I don't know what happened. So now the guy said it could be a tick. Not in the butt, but in maybe the foot, and it radiated up. What do I know? It's amazing. You survive everything. That's all. See, I'm lucky. I grew up the old-fashioned way on I grew up the old-fashioned way. I was taught to suffer and to bear suffering and not look for happiness. So truthfully, any day that I'm not totally miserable and only mildly unhappy and in pain, I consider it a good day. I was never taught that life's supposed to be blissful. I was taught to work and to suffer, and if I told my mother I felt the pain, she said, what do you think, you're the only one? She wouldn't take an aspirin, that woman. She said, what do you think, I don't have aches and pains? What's the big deal? She made me shut up about complaining. every time something bothered me. So I didn't complain, you know. So you learn now in America today. No wonder they need kidney transplants, heart, liver transplants, 18 Tylenol a day they take. They look at the ads on TV. They take this, take that. The first sign, well, go and play ball, but take 4 Tylenol before you take a ball game. You're golfing? Well, don't feel any aches or pains. Take 4 of these. Stress out your kidneys and your liver. That's okay. When you need a new liver, we're there for you. We have a special unit in Bangalore, India, that will find for you the freshest, youngest livers and kidneys. So go ahead and suppress that pain all your life, because we're also in the end-line kidney and liver business. This is called American Corporate Life. Sacramento, Marty, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi. You know, I think that the radio is more popular. I used to listen to smooth jazz and different topics on TV, and it became so boring. It's just the psychopathology of the average, you know, just the same thing over and over again. With your program, people can actually grow from it, you know, take notes every darn day from something that you're saying.
Well, that's a compliment, and I certainly accept it, but that's owing to my educational background and the fact that I'm a writer before. I was a writer for many years before. And so that's a compliment, and I surely appreciate it. But, Marty, let me tell you something. My audience is a unique audience in radio. You know, the size of it is not as important as the type it is. I believe I get the best callers in the business, the most interesting calls. Sometimes they come at me, I can't even believe what I'm getting. And I think that each host finds his own audience. Now, certainly there's overlap. Many of you listen to Rush in the morning, and you listen to me in the afternoon or early evening. I know that. But they're very different shows, wouldn't you say?
Yes. Let me tell you something about the 4th of July. In my neighborhood, people have those aerial things which are as legal as hell, and if they catch onto your roof, you know, you're going to have a fire and you just lost everything. A couple years ago, what I did is I broke out with my Bible, a copy of the Constitution, and my barbecue tongs. I just sat in the backyard because that's what this is really about. It's not about some idiot breaking out with the fireworks. They don't even know what it's about. They don't know who
Jimmy Bancroft
was. They don't know a damn thing.
No. What is the 4th of July celebrating? What does it celebrate?
Constitution.
Could you sing the national anthem if your life depended on it? Do you know all the words?
Absolutely. Well, I'll say 95% of it.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. Many people don't. They don't even know the national anthem. You see at a ball game or I go to a fight and they sing it. Most people go, I'm one of the guys who's standing with the hand on the heart and sing the whole thing. And people like it. You know, you hear they say, oh, say, and that's the end of it. It doesn't mean they don't want to know. It's just that it's been drummed out of them by the psycho-liberal communists in the school system. You know that.
Absolutely.
Thanks. No, I was at a fight, the last one I was at. I forget an arena in L.A., outside of L.A. It was a big fight. We're in the fourth row. Rockstar Fund supported it. It was a big day for me again to see that. And, okay, so they do the national – I didn't like them doing the Mexican national anthem at this. I really hated that. I thought it was absurd to pander to the illegal aliens there. It really bothered me. You know, but this is an example of America today. They're waving the Mexican flag, singing that. Then they go to our flag like it's a binational nation already. Okay? But let's put that aside for the minute. So when they do the – and then by the way, some of the Mexicans booed in the American National Anthem. Again, I found it very offensive. But let's put that aside. So the American National Anthem is being sung correctly, not the Black National Anthem. I see, you know, like the people love it. They always love it. They go crazy for it. And I see a few – I took a picture of them once. I have it on my camera somewhere for the website. I have a great picture of one of the guards who was a huge man. He was a sheriff, one of the sheriffs. He was either a black man or a Hispanic man. And he had his hand on his heart. His friends didn't. And he was looking at the flag, but he didn't know the words. And you could see his face. He wanted to sing the song, and he didn't know how because he grew up in a milieu where America is not loved. I'll be right back.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation, and you know, look, I'm in the media. This is a big media story. Rush signs through 2016, $400 million deal. probably a mixture of salary or compensation and revenue sharing. And what's that, $40, $50 million a year, whatever they say, $38 million, but I don't know how they come up with that since the numbers don't match. In either case, it's very high. And if talk radio is booming, how do you explain newspapers and TV are dying? How do you explain this? Explain it to me. Explain that to me. Please, explain it to me. Tom in Chicago, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hey, Michael. The reason why newspapers are dying is because, first of all, they contain non-original content. So the same AP story appears in 20 different papers, or as your show has original content, you are the Michael Savage brand. You are the only one that promotes that. And secondly, by the time you get a newspaper, the story's been on the internet for 24 hours already, so it's stale.
Interesting. Very interesting. You know, I actually didn't analyze it that way. That's true. Every newspaper covers the same AP Reuters stories, which you can get in 5, 6, 10 minutes on 3 or 4 sites. So why go to them? They don't have a monopoly in that sense anymore. They're dinosaurs. So they really have to have some content that is not available on the net. What would that be? I mean, they have something. There's a real franchise that a newspaper could have that they're not developing. What would that be?
Coupons and classified ads is about all I could think of.
But can't you get that on the internet?
Yeah, but I don't know. There's a tangible element to it that I mean, the one thing that they do have is this tangible element. But without original content, they're nothing.
That is really fascinating. That is really fascinating. Thank you for that insight. Truly fascinating. San Francisco, on my home affiliate, a Clear Channel station, KNEW. We'll go to Ray the minute I come back here in San Francisco. Incidentally, I just re-signed, I should say that, with my local affiliate here in San Francisco. I'm very proud to announce that. This is something I've been working on for a while, and I'm staying at the very same station in San Francisco I've been on for the last 5 years. I'm very proud to announce that. And I'll take a caller from my local KNEW affiliate momentarily, and then your calls from around America right here on the one and only, the original Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, the Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
National anthem, as you know, not the black national anthem that was sung somewhere in Colorado by a Quisling. Of course, her microphone should have been cut off and she should have been thrown out. But yeah, don't expect politicians to act accordingly. Expect them to act like the Quislings that they are. Play a little louder because I'm going somewhere with this. You're still seated. You know, I think America can be divided into two parts. Those who are emotionally moved by the national anthem, as I am, and those who don't feel anything or don't even know what they're listening to. And I would include all the illegal aliens in that bunch and all of the liberals slash socialists slash communists in that bunch as well. Now, we were talking about the biggest media deal in history, which is Rush Limbaugh's $400 million 8-year deal that was announced today. It is very big news. It's very good news, particularly for those of us in talk radio, because a rising tide raises all ships, as they say. But I've been raising a more fundamental question. How come talk radio, particularly conservative talk radio, is booming while newspapers are declining and television is declining? And we've been talking about that. How do you explain it? Well, I'll answer it for you in another way. I'm going to read an article for you that appeared today in the Philadelphia Inquirer by a man named Chris Satullo, who I never heard of and I'm sure we'll never hear from again. Chris Satullo, columnist for a newspaper called the Philly Inquirer, writes this: "A not-so-glorious fourth. U.S. atrocities are unworthy of our heritage." Chris Satullo says, "Put the fireworks in storage, cancel the parade, tuck the soaring speeches in a drawer for another time." He says, "This year America doesn't deserve to celebrate its birthday, for we have sinned." He says, "We have failed to pay attention. We spit on the memory of those who did that brave, brave thing in Philadelphia 232 years ago," he writes. "The America those men founded should never torture a prisoner. The America they founded should never imprison people for years without charge or hearing. The America," and he goes on and on, of course, taking the side of the Al-Qaeda members who have been imprisoned and waterboarded in order to make sure they gave up information to keep that pig safe, that fat little pig at the Inquirer, that little turd, that communistic turd. And then he goes on and says, "Such abuses once were committed by the arrogant crowns of Europe spawning rebellion." Now, I'll show you the deranged mind of a liberal. I told you liberalism is a mental disorder. The man's wires are crossed. This was not done to American citizens, mind you. These things were done to those who participated in 9/11 or would have contributed to the participation of another terrorist event. He knows that. And then he goes on and says, "Today our nation does such things in the name of our safety." Duh. Petrified and willing to take the risk that love of liberty demands we close our eyes. What is this man talking about? Hasn't he seen the men have come back from Iraq and Afghanistan without legs and arms? Unwilling to take the risks that love of liberty demands? Who is going to fight the Al-Qaeda members, you fat toad, you? And then he goes on to say, "We have done such things on orders from the Oval Office. We have done them without general outrage or shame. Abu Ghraib, Guantanamo, CIA secret prisons, rendition, blah, blah, blah. It's not enough that we had good reason to be scared." And he goes on and on about why he hates America. He says, "We have betrayed the July 4th creed. Don't imagine that only the torturer's hands bear the guilt." You see, liberal guilt? I mean, this is the psychopathology of the liberal, particularly the liberal in the newsroom, and it explains why the newspapers are dying. Don't you get it? This explains the popularity of Obama amongst those in the newsroom, particularly white fat males over 50 who are guilty for even having a job. He said, "We are complicit. Innocents were jailed. Humans tortured. Our Constitution mangled. And we said so little, we took the coward's way. And all for a scam. The waterboarding, the snarling dogs, the theft of sleep. All the diabolical tricks haven't made us safer." Hey, fatso, the reason you could sit there on your computer in Philadelphia is because of these little tricks, you schmuck, you. Liberalism is a mental disorder. It's also the ultimate cowardice. So he says, "So put out no flags, sing no patriotic hymns. We deserve no fourth this year. Let us atone in quiet and humility. Let us spend the day truly studying the example of our founders, maybe earn a new birth of courage before our nation's birthday next rolls around." Now, I'm entering this by Chris Saluto from the Philadelphia Inquirer as a piece of evidence in my indictment of why newspapers are failing. It's because of fat old men over 50 like him, white men at that, who exhibit the disease called liberalism, the mental disorder, and are so infused with liberal guilt that they continue to hate the nation, hate the church, hate God, hate the family, and rush in the other direction, literally embracing our enemies themselves, saying that they're the victims. Now you know why newspapers are dying and why Savage is thriving. San Francisco, Ray, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Michael, thank you for your fine program. Shows like yours and Rush survive because you love America. They hate America. When I listen to Savage Nation, I laugh and giggle. When I read the newspaper, I get angry. I think you know the left better than they know themselves, Mike. And also, you're willing to criticize and examine your own side equally as tough as you criticize the enemy. And the left is not capable of doing that.
I agree. I'm willing to constantly put a microscope on Republicans like George Bush. I've done it over and over again on many issues. When have you last seen a left-wing columnist question anything from the Democrat side? Tell me when.
Psychological nudity scares them, Michael. They have the fear of offending the minority.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't have any liberal guilt. I do not suffer liberal guilt. I've paid too much already for the so-called minority. I'm sick of it. I've had too many jobs stolen out from under my feet. My taxes are extraordinarily high to support them. You want me to go down the list?
Mike, as long as there's a Ruth Bader Ginsburg, we need Michael Savage. You stay right where you're at and keep doing your work.
Thanks for listening here on KNEW in San Francisco, Ray. I surely appreciate it. San Jose, Jeff, you're next up. Go ahead, please.
Michael, I'll tell you why you guys are succeeding when everybody else is failing. It's you guys are the very last bastion of hope for people who are based in logic. The foundation is of talk radio is truth. It's the only place where we can go where emotion isn't the rule of the day. And emotion-based anything is great for a few minutes, but it wears you out and leaves you with zero hope, and you have nothing else to do except for lose interest in it and walk away. And that's exactly what happened to Air America.
Okay, thanks for your opinion. I appreciate that very much. But I read you a column by some unknown reporter in the Philadelphia Inquirer who hates America, who says we should be ashamed to be Americans and we should not celebrate the 4th, that we have sinned. And he says we have not gained any peace from it. I don't know what universe he lives in other than the universe of insanity. That's my take on it. You know, it goes again to this issue of our mayor here in San Francisco. Here is a guy, Anitousum Newsom, who is presiding over a homicide rate that makes Chicago of the 1930s, well, it's approaching Chicago of the 1930s. He's got a dirty city. The streets are filthy. We've got bums all over the streets, which he said he'd clean up. But now the latest scandal comes out. A father and two sons are offed in the streets. They're not gang members, mind you. Offed by an illegal alien who had been released just 2 months before on a gun charge for not enough evidence, said his DA. Then the next insult comes 3 days ago that the city's been paying and harboring young crack dealers from the Honduras. And now the guy says, it's not my fault. It's the court's fault. And now the guy thinks he can be governor. What does that tell you? What world do these people live in that he thinks he could be governor simply because the homosexuals cheer him? Does that not tell you a story unto itself? Dan, San Francisco, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah, hi, Michael. I was watching this liberal guilt thing. It's so funny. I was watching a show on PBS about slaves coming from Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I saw it. It's actually a good show, but the white liberals on this show were so syrupy guilty. It was unbelievable.
You mean like they personally took part in slavery?
Oh, yeah. It was like, and I was watching it with a black friend of mine, and he was laughing at these people going, man. These
yeah,
people
of course. I know black people laugh at white liberals. They know that they're insane.
He was laughing at these people, saying everything that was in my mind, and I couldn't believe it. It was like, I don't buy into this whole...
What was this, on the local PBS in San Francisco?
Right, exactly.
Oh, they're the lowest of the low. They are so pathological that they belong in an asylum. Well, they are in an asylum. They're on PBS. Thanks for the call. Yeah. They caused everyone's problems. So what do you want to talk about? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. So many good stories. Also, I forgot to tell you the dream, and I have 2 minutes to do so. So I wake up with the red buttock. Now a guy calls and says it might be the a tick. I don't know. I have to go get the check for the antibodies now for the tick. It could be with the country property. Everything I found in life you pay for. Every pleasure produces pain. Did you know that? Did you ever found that in life yet? That there's actually a law of physics that has not yet been written. That for every pleasure you experience, there's some pain on the other side. Like eating too many hot dogs, you know, the obvious. Too much sex or sex with the wrong person at the wrong time. You know, a night with Venus, a lifetime with Mercury and all that. That's a great old joke that goes over the heads of anyone over under the age of probably 70. I'm not 70, but I was told that by a guy who's since dead. That was very popular in his day. I used to I'm one of these guys who used to like old guys. I would seek out older guys, at least 20 years older than myself, to listen to them, to tell me stories, because they always knew something I didn't hear about. I thought it was funny. So with this guy Irving, I loved him. Oh, he died a few years ago. I hadn't seen him in 20 years. Guy weighed about 400 pounds. He was an entomologist, one of the most brilliant men I ever met in my life. But a crackpot, really, but bizarre. Look, intelligent people, particularly geniuses, are bizarre, and they're hard to get along with. Let me tell you that. They're not nice. They don't understand what the word nice means. They're idiosyncratic. But he and I got along in a certain way. So he told me that story, that in his day, the phrase, a night with Venus and a lifetime with Mercury, was very popular. And I'll tell you what it means when I come back right here on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Well, here I am. Here I am, 24 minutes after the hour on the Savage Nation on a Wednesday afternoon in the West Coast. And my loyal mascot, Teddy, the 11-pound gray poodle, is asleep under the desk. And he heard the lead-in just now, the music, the bumper music, and he stretched. He knew we were going into the halftime break here, basically. He knows every break. I saw him do a stretch. Poodles are great. They stride on. They look like monkeys, poodles, because they can stay. Their joints are different than most dogs. They can stretch out when they sleep with their legs straight out. They look like simians. It's astounding. I get a monkey, but I told you the story of Louie and the monkey. The monkey attacked him. I don't want to risk a monkey. Dogs are much more easy to domesticate than a monkey. I have 56 stories now in my Savage Stories volume that I'm going to put to the printer eventually. I want to get it out in time for the election. I think I'm going to do it that way. 56 stories that you've heard on the radio, including Louie the Monkey, One-Armed Frank. I like it. It was supposed to be my autobiography, but in the sense that it's the stories of my life, it's not really a true autobiography. You know, like, and then I went to. It's not that kind of book. It's the stories. In a way, it's more interesting and reads better. So, anyway, Teddy's not in it. He should be in it. There should be a whole little story on my dogs. Well, there is. Tippy dies and gets thrown in a garbage truck. That's in there. That's right. I go back to the childhood. Because in those days, when a dog died, it wasn't like, crematoria and crying. You called the New York Sanitation Department. The guys came with those rough brown uniforms with grim faces. Ooh, God. No one smiled. Like, workers didn't smile in those days. They didn't look like Mr. Goodwrench. They walked in with their grim, like they just got through burying somebody out in Canarsie, you know, for a few friends in the prosciutto business. And the dog was dead, stiff on the rug. He was 9. He ate the family, died. Lucky he lived that long, 9 years. May as well have been a lab animal, a test animal with what he ate. That he lived 9 years shows what stock he came from, the part chow dog. Anyway, woke up, the tongue is out. He's stiff on the rug. My mother's crying. I come down, what's the matter, what's the matter? He's dead. So, like, right away you don't touch him because you don't know. Like, dogs, if they could be having a fit. If you touch him, they could rip your arm off. So you start by probing, like, an extremity, the foot, the lower foot. Stiff, and the next foot stiff. All right, the declaration. So you call the sanitation department, and they come in. I mean, it's, like, so brutal. And look at the dog, not a word, like a grunt. And they pick up. One garbage man takes the two front paws. The other garbage man takes the two rear paws. And out the door, around in the back, thrown. I don't know what to make of it. I thought there should have been something more for a being that lived in the house for 9 years. But look, that was then. Today, it's the opposite. Well, I myself am soft-hearted. A different world. My last dog, Snowy, running. I could see it to this minute, from puppy to the old age with the light going out of her eye in the yard, the last yard in Sonoma, that she weighed like next to nothing with the rib cage exposed with the light going out of her eye. And now she's ashes in a box on the table. So what are you going to do? I didn't throw her in a garbage can. But, you know, what are you going to do with the way of all flesh? Oh, a lifetime with Venus. A night with Venus, a lifetime with Mercury. I forgot to tell you, I got 27 seconds. I got a migraine that I have to rush it out of me. Why do I have to take another break right now? Answer. Because talk radio is lucrative. Why? Because of ads. Why? Because advertisers know that you buy things. You're not liberals. So therefore, I can't do it in 9 seconds or less. I'm sorry I missed the break on Venus and Mercury. I'll tell you when I come back on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It is the Savage Nation. So the Lifetime, A Night with Venus, Lifetime with Mercury, quickly, it was popular until, well, the 40s when penicillin came around. A Lifetime with Venus obviously meant a night with a woman. A Lifetime with Mercury was a reference to the treatment, the absurd, ridiculous medical treatment for syphilis, which was mercury. As you well know, mercury is a very toxic heavy metal, and people often died from the treatment rather than from the syphilis itself. Jack London, for example, it is assumed had mercury poisoning from the treatment, from being treated for having been treated for syphilis with mercury. So that's where Night with Venus, Lifetime with Mercury comes from. The kind of stuff people play with, but it just shows you the level of literacy in the previous generation, that even something to do with sex or sexual of a sexual nature was done with cleverness as compared to the lewdness of today, which passes for intelligence. Anyway, let's go to the callers, 1-800-449-8255. So we're reading an article today in the New York Times that Osama bin Laden, many years ago, said that he wanted to see oil at $144 a barrel. Did you hear this? He once said that he wanted to see oil at $144 a barrel to cripple the West. Now there's talk of a sinking of oil tankers in the Strait of Hormuz, choking off the channel that funnels 14 million barrels of oil a day from the Persian Gulf to the rest of the world. So we're reaching the nightmare scenario now. It's like 2 minutes to midnight. And the question is, what would we do then? Well, I know what I would do immediately. Forget about drilling in Anwar. Forget about new oil fields because you can't pump fast enough. The country called the United States right now has only 3% of the world's known oil reserves. What would you do? What would you do? We have the most powerful military in the world. When it comes to national security, you use it. You take it from enemies. That's what you do. What world are you people living in? Haven't you seen what playing nice gets you? And the problem with liberals is they grew up in sheltered environments in the suburbs, or they were sheltered in Manhattan or wherever, and they were sheltered by mommy and daddy and this and that, and they never ever got punched in the nose. They knew that this stuff went on. They knew it happened somewhere in America, somewhere in New York, but it never affected them. They never got punched in the nose. They never got knocked down a flight of subway steps. No, but they heard it happen, but it was because of bad, bad, mean people doing things to the poor, underprivileged individuals who did that to them. And that if only they could continue to be good, good people, why, all good things would come to them. These are the same people who were told that in order to get ahead in life, you should have fun, quote-unquote fun. Remember that? Teach your child that he shouldn't seek a career or training or buckle down and learn. No, teach the child to seek fun, and in having fun, he will find a living. Well, the only people who can make a living having fun outside of a very, very rarefied few are the insane in madhouses. They're the ones who have fun. Comedians don't have fun, by the way. They look like they're having fun. That's why they're called entertainers. They're not having fun. Most of them are alcoholics or drug addicts from the stress they're under of pretending they're having fun. They're tortured individuals. The only people who have fun making a living are insane people. They make a living off you in the nut house. They're being taken care of. So what would you do? You live in a crazy, dangerous world. You have madmen wrapping themselves in a religion. Now they got us over a barrel to an extent we never imagined possible. You have a president who's a little too friendly with the oil magnates, and we all know that. The country is starting to really wobble economically. And we have our dear friends in Mexico, one of the largest oil reserves on earth. You say, well, you can't just steal their oil. No, you're right. You can't. You shouldn't. No, you can't. You shouldn't. But you could demand payment for the social costs of having housed illegal aliens for 30 years that are running, what, $30 billion a year? Well, I don't know the exact number, but I know that $15 billion a year gets siphoned out of our economy, untaxed, and goes to Mexico. That's one country. So let's say we need to get paid back for the cost of social services for illegal aliens. You take it from Mexico. They're the biggest supplier of illegal aliens. They have a resource that we need. Take it from them. Make them give it to us. They couldn't stop us. We have a bigger military. Now, what about our dear friends in Iraq, the ungrateful Shiites who were liberated from the Sunni Saddam Hussein? Oh, they're sitting on the biggest reserve, one of the biggest reserves in the world, and they give the oil contracts to who? To America? No, they gave them to foreign consortiums. And they didn't pay us back, no less, the $1 trillion that we've spent to liberate them from Saddam Hussein. $1 trillion, men walking around with artificial legs, eyes, ears, noses, artificial arms. God knows the pain they're in every day of the week. 30, 40,000 men mutilated for life to liberate the ingrates called the Shia. So you take it from them. What, they have a military to stop you? You take it to be paid in kind for the services performed by the United States of America. So you can solve the oil crisis immediately if we had leadership that was not compromised. Do you see it in John McCain? He's in Colombia today. That's a real smart choice. That's a heck of a choice. Whoever's been advising John McCain is a real Pulitzer Prize winner there. Actually, would be a Pulitzer Prize winner. That's about all he should win. A real genius, an Einstein, the advisor to McCain. The world's in turmoil. Everything's topsy-turvy. We have an oil crisis. Israel with the bulldozer. And this schmuck is in Colombia marching around talking about more free trade when Americans have no jobs, a lot of people. Poor people have no jobs, or they used to have jobs that have been exported to Colombia particularly. But there's John McCain marching in Bush's footsteps. But as I said to you, if it's a choice between him and a Marxist, socialist, liberal, I will take a Bush 3. I have no choice. You'll be a fool to say otherwise. That's all there is to it. There's nothing you can do about it. And then you could hope, pray, that you can lobby McCain, forcefully meet outside the White House, bring a lot of people there, just stop him from doing Bush 3 and becoming a patriot again. That's all you can do. But you can never, ever appeal to Obama in a million years. You could never reach him, you know. So there are solutions to $144 a barrel oil. Solutions are in Mexico. The solutions are in Iraq. Those are immediate. The oil is actually being pumped. Sure, we can drill in Anwar. Sure, we can let the oil companies drill offshore, which they should have done a long time ago. Never mind the schmucks in the kayaks. Oh, ruining my environment. And how they get their kayak to the water? On the top of an SUV. I encounter them as a boater all the time, these hypocritical fools. I'm a bicyclist. I never saw such idiots as bicycle riders in San Francisco. What a bunch of lunatics. And that's, again, the spoiled brat liberal gets away with it because we have Annie Toussaint Newsom as the mayor, who permits them to block traffic, insult drivers, keep people from going to a hospital to deliver a baby. Also, a bunch of spoiled brats can ride their bicycles and put their behinds in your face. We have police who would gladly wade into those critical mass crowds and throw the bicycles in a van and arrest these people, give them 30 days hard time in a jail. Then they'd stop being the brats they are, tying up traffic on a Friday night. But Annie Toussaint Newsom thinks he did such a good job appeasing all of the madmen and madwomen in the city that now he can be governor. And the damage he did to San Francisco he can now do to the state itself. But he couldn't do much worse than Schwarzenegger. Who else would want the job? 1-800-449-8255, michaelsavage.com. Fears again of oil shortage. Fears again of oil shortage. Why is that? Why do we have an oil shortage? Imports account for 60% of daily American oil consumption, up from 47% 10 years ago. Well, why is this? What is the reason? Well, there's a reason. Sure, it's not just cars. We all use air conditioning. We all use electric. How many electrical appliances do you use? I'm not guilty about it. I pay for it. See, I have a meter in my house. It's called an electrical meter. They understand that it's a graduated. The liberals don't understand that those who use more pay more. So we subsidize the oil industry and the electrical industry. We're not taking it from anybody. We pay for it. The more we use, the more we pay. It is not free. Unlike them, they probably have some like bootleg line running in from the PG&E line. Libs were very famous for the bootleg lines they ran. They bootlegged and stole it from someone. There's a story here in the San Francisco paper. Just came out today. There's a town called Bolinas. It's a beachfront, seaside, horror house town filled with the meanest liberals you've ever met. If you could think of, like, when Mickey Schwerner and the other civil rights marchers were tortured and thrown in a dam in the 60s during the civil rights days, these are liberals like not Mickey Schwerner. These are liberals like the guys who put Mickey Schwerner in a dam. These are, in other words, these are mean, mean bumpkins who think they're so superior to the world in this town called Bolinas. So the story comes out. You can call the town Obamaville. It's 100% ultra-lib, socialist, communist, America-hating of the lowest order. And they pride themselves on being separated from everybody else over the hill. They all think they're socially conscious. Mainly they're a bunch of drunks and drug addicts with brat children who never worked for a living, living in hovels. Anyway, the article says near-fatal stabbing jolts laid-back Bolinas. And it says, late the night of June 23rd, there's a bonfire burned on the town's beach. Gee, I thought they were into global warming. Why would they have a bonfire? Isn't that bad for the environment? A large group of young men from town nearly beat to death a homeless man who had drifted into town a year earlier spouting philosophy, police said. Ricky Green, who was in his early 30s, was punched and stabbed and remains hospitalized. Three men and a teenage boy stand accused of attempted murder. Everyone knows Green, that's the homeless guy they stabbed, who practiced martial arts, moves in the streets, spoke of odd concepts like the fifth triangle, blah, 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 and sang some song. And so everyone thinks it's shocking that this happened. They're just shocking. And one waitress says, there's a divide between the adults and the kids who were expected to have idyllic childhoods in an out-of-the-way place. And she said, the people that should be our role models are getting drunk all the time. That's the adults of Bolinas. Old hippie drunks and drug addicts. You can imagine what their children are like with parents like that. So she goes on and says, it's a loss of both adults and children stepping up to their responsibilities. We're sick right now, I guess. Everyone's still talking about Green's beating. On a sculpture next to the Bolinas Market, residents had placed notes about Green. One read, the end of the brutality starts now. Another offered a prayer, quote, for all those involved in the ability to emerge into the light from all of this darkness. Whoa, whoa, profundity, Obama, yay. Liberalism is a mental disorder. In this town, the entire town is a mental asylum. So they've arrested people for the attempted murder. 16-year-old, this one, blah, blah, blah. Now, here comes the punchline of the story. The attorney for them, a creature named John Rankin, says this. He says, I'm quoting now. Some kids got drunk and did something stupid that they're going to regret for a very long time, but it's not attempted murder. I don't think they really thought it through. It was kind of a rash act. Oh, they're just kids. Stab somebody and beat them up. A homeless guy, no less. Kind of a rash act. That'd be like the Palestinian in Jerusalem who didn't think it through and he jumped on the bulldozer and killed a number of people and knocked a bus over with people in it. I guess he didn't think it through. It was just a kind of a rash act. Of course, some people said that the victim got what he deserved. Magica Hills, the daughter of the owner of a saloon, said, the guy was a problem in this town. The guy was a problem in this town. Oh, God. They said the homeless guy came here to go on a spiritual journey. He wanted to give everything up and see what comes from having nothing. Well, he learned what comes from having nothing. You wind up in a dead-end town at the end of the line called Bolinas, and you get stabbed to death. Many residents hoped the beating would serve as a wake-up call, leading Bolinas to reconnect with its communal roots. Not enough adults were being responsible for children. For any child who needs it, she said, we're ready to create the kind of community where every kid has that. Oh, yeah, go grab the mother out of the saloon there, or get the dope out of the houses. Yeah, adults, some adults. So there's an example of what goes on in a 100% liberal town. It's a town without pity. 100% Obamaville. Ultra-liberal, socialist, communist, America-hating people. They produce children without a conscience, and they think that they're better than you. I'll be right back. Savage.
It's
is. Here's another Marine, Sergeant Johnny Winnick, who's now being charged with murder at Camp Pendleton by the vermin in Marine uniforms who don't actually fight, but exist simply to try Marines. He's a sniper. He was actually out there doing the thing that Marines are trained to do, which is fight for their country, as opposed to try to undermine the Marines, and now he's being charged with murder. Can you believe the country you're living in, that George Bush permits this to go on and puts crocodile tears out every time he's with wounded men at Walter Reed? It's amazing to me that you get away with this. He gets away with this. It's astounding to me. So the man thinks that guys are planning a roadside bomb, and he shoots them. Now, all of a sudden, a captain living over here with a uniform, you know, he may as well be an usher in a movie theater. A guy who actually wasn't on the front lines, someone with a law degree probably, says that he did it under hostile intent, and he killed, and he's being tried for murder. So, I mean, I rest my case. The country is imploding because of bad leadership, because we don't have a leader. We have I don't have a word for George Bush anymore. It's because of him that the Marines are being undermined, and they're trying to kill the Marine Corps. To the best of my ability to understand that it's part of a plot to undermine the military by weakening probably the most distinguished unit within all the military units or branches of the military, and they're all distinguished in some regard. But the Marines are a hardcore unit of real combat-oriented men. And if you can get rid of the Marines, what you do here is you make the country easier to roll into a kind of Denmark, a psychological Denmark, New World Order army. And that's what they're doing here. That's the only explanation of why Bush doesn't step in and stop this persecution. Mary in Washington, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Yes. Michael, good afternoon. It's nice to talk to you.
Okay, what's on your mind?
Well, I'm in the radio business. I started during the Carter administration, and deregulation came along under Reagan, and everybody said, oh, there goes radio. Radio's going to die. The fact is, radio is a talk medium. It's the radio station that I work for has just changed its FM to a talk station.
Mm-hmm.
Talk radio is thriving and here to stay. Radio will always be around, and, you know, your job and my job is safe.
Okay, thanks for the call. 1-800-449-8255, Chicago, Illinois. Kelly, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. I am going to comment on your Lyme disease. That's not why I'm calling, but one suggestion for you is not that you necessarily have been gallivanting around in grass or fields for the past 3 days, but it's Teddy. If Teddy curls up and sleeps with you on your bed, there you go.
Hmm. Yeah, but he hasn't been bitten by a tick.
Well, animals aren't necessarily bitten by the deer tick. They're carriers of them.
I can believe it. Well, I love the dog an awful lot, so it's possible that I'm paying for my affection. There's no question about it. As I said to you, there seems to be a law of physics that is irrefutable. Everything that you like hurts you. Everything you love harms you. And for every pleasure, you get a pain.
Right, but I'm calling about Mayor Newsom and his potential run for governor of California. And I think, unfortunately, Californians are going to have to pick between the lesser of two evils, just as all of America are.
You mean it's between any Twosome Newsom and who? Who's the lesser of the evils? Who's going to run against them?
Schwarzenegger, and I'm going to tell you why I think that.
Oh, Schwarzenegger can never run again. Schwarzenegger's turned out to be a complete boondoggle faker, as I knew he was from the minute he ran. You know, this was one of the only shows he wouldn't come on. He came on every other show. They were taken in by his star quality. I always thought he was a fraud. I thought he was a straight-out steroid muscle head from day one and a phony. And I knew that because he was married to a Kennedyite, and he's been acting like a Kennedyite. And long before, lo and behold, within a year or two, he went and hired the former Democrat governor's chief of staff, whose name happens to be Kennedy, who was an out lesbian, radical leftist, and she's been running the state for him. So, I mean, what's new under the sun? They're all frauds. But any Twosome Newsom can easily be defeated by a number of Democrats, primarily because they're not as fanatical as him, and they haven't run the city into the ground, a city into the ground, the way he has. And this latest scandal with the crack dealers that they've been sheltering, the death of the father and the two sons, the shameful district attorney, this will all come up because his competitors will bring it up. That's what's going to happen. He's making a huge error. And by the way, no other mayor has become governor from this city.
Savage. Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Is the Savage Nation. I'm glad to be with you, and tomorrow I should be with you, God willing, unless this condition kicks up again. And then Friday I'll do my family barbecue. I probably will not be here. There'll be a July 4th show, but it should be fun anyway, one way or the other. We're talking about all these topics, $400 million deal for Rush, which is very good news for anybody in the radio business. But I've raised the question of, how could radio be thriving, conservative radio now, not radio in general, not music radio, not liberal radio, they're all dying. Why is conservative, he's Republican talk, let's put it to you that way. I'm conservative talk, he's Republican talk. Okay, fine. Different, little overlap, but different audiences. We're thriving, they're dying, yet newspapers are collapsing, TV revenue is collapsing. How do you explain that? That's one topic. Then there are other topics out there. McCain is in Colombia just when the hostages are released. This is amazing to me, just totally amazing to me. The Israel story, Israel getting back two dead bodies for one terrorist who crushed the child's head against rocks, then bashed the child's head in with a gun butt, and the mother smothered her 2-year-old to death, hiding from the terrorist that they're releasing. What kind of the West seems to be over. How do these people wind up on top of these governments who are so anti the people? How does this go on? Answer, money rules everything, and the money class does not have a loyalty to any nation. There is no nationhood. Ultimately, at a certain level, there is no nationality. And what they will soon learn, as previous generations have learned, that it does not matter how rich you are, you must have a nation or you will become a man without a nation. A man without a country. And a man without a country, fundamentally, no matter how much money he has, is a dead man. Indianapolis, Indiana. Karen, thanks for calling. Welcome to the Savage Nation.
Hi, Michael. Michael, I didn't know any of the details of the Bolinas beating case until I heard you talk about it tonight. But
yes.
Based on the way that the news story is being reported, I wanted to just make a guess. In the Bolinas case, the teen's lawyer wanted us to feel sorry for the teens. You know, they were just...
Yes. Let me just bring people up to speed. Bolinas is a retrograde, ultra-liberal town in Marin County, California, that prides itself on hating America and being totally socialist. And it's filled with drunks and potheads and crack addicts and their children who are throwbacks to a different time and place. It's a terrible, terrible place. And they are all shocked that their teenagers could stab a homeless man, as just happened. So go on, please.
Well, My guess is, I'm just going to guess that when I compare this reporting to the Duke rape case, those men were despicable, horrible. The Bolinas teens were just being kids. Can I make a guess? Is the Bolinas victim, the homeless man, is he white?
No.
Black?
No. The perpetrators are white, but I believe that the victim may not be.
It just seemed like the way they were reporting it, it was set up.
Oh, you'll never see this in the paper. They'll sweep the whole thing under the rug because, see, Bolinas is a town that is a town without pity. And anyone who doesn't live there, they say they live over the hill. It used to be a transport point during Prohibition for bootleg whiskey that came in down the coast. So basically they're ne'er-do-wells. who have descended from bootleggers, the low end of the bootlegger world. And they're just ne'er-do-well, you know, super libs who think they're better than everybody else. So now that a guy got stabbed, a homeless guy, they're saying, how could it happen to us? Why are there no parents guiding them? Because the parents are drug addicts and alcoholics. Why? That's the answer. Thanks for the call. We'll break in a few minutes here because I did a great interview that I'm going to play for you shortly. One last call in this particular segment from San Diego. Tom, go ahead. You're on the Savage Nation.
Yeah. Hey, Michael, I really appreciate what you're doing. You got a lot of guts to say what you say on the radio.
What do you mean I got a lot? What did I say that offended anybody?
No, I didn't say you offended. I said you got a lot of guts. I mean, you got, you know, what's down below, what it takes to say what you say. You're not motivated by money. You write about a person that don't have a country because you're more...
I got to tell you something. No, I'm not motivated by money. In fact, I've paid the price for speaking frankly. Although this show is the third-ranked show in America, believe me, I've paid the price because many advertisers are cowards and they're afraid to be around anyone who's patriotic and truthful. Trust me, I've been boycotted by publishers in New York, but I had to go around them. Trust me, I've paid the price my whole life for speaking out, and I'm not going to stop now. It's a little too late.
No, sir, you got me wrong. No, I was saying this. You got the guts. The other people don't, and that's what I appreciate about
it. No, I know we're on the same, too. You just provoked my anger when you said I have paid the price. People think because I have the third largest audience in America in talk radio that I'm a Mr., you know, like Gulfstream 5. I wish I was, but I'm not. And the reason is because the liberals in the advertising business, the liberals in the radio business have continued to hammer this show for being too truthful. Anyone who's basically a Republican stooge can go to the head of the class. Anyone who's a real conservative can drop dead, according to them.
Well, you got my money, sir. That's for sure.
That's all I care about is my audience. I don't need any more money. Trust me on that one. I'm still wearing the same shirt I bought in college right here on the radio station. I like this shirt. It's been washed for many years. It's softer. You know, you can only wear one shirt at a time. And I happen to like old shirts that have been worn and washed a lot of times. In a few minutes, I have an interview I did with a man named Dwayne Lester on drilling oil in America. You're talking about oil at $144 a barrel. Why don't we drill here in America? How long would it take to drill in America? How much oil is still left under the ground in America? These are very important questions that I think you need answers to. Please go to michaelsavage.com. He cried Allahu Akbar and hit the gas. And he drove his bulldozer into a bunch of people in Jerusalem. Honda grows while U.S. auto industry falters. I've called for tariffs on foreign cars. Young illegal immigrants in San Francisco have been given sanctuary by, the whole liberal establishment. They're not liberal at all. There are other stories I can mention. Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway has worst first half since 1990. Going down the page on michaelsavage.com, singer subs Black Anthem for Star Spangled Banner. She's talentless on top of it all. The question I raised was whether the singer who sang the Black Anthem at the Denver gathering will be the singer selected by Obama should he, God forbid, win the presidency. And will she also substitute the Black Anthem for the Star Spangled Banner on the steps of the White House? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. Dutch politician to make another anti-Muslim film. Good for him. He hasn't been intimidated. Deal lets U.S. drones strike Bin Laden in. Musharraf has given a free hand to the U.S. to use a drone to kill the arch terrorist of the world. Whoa, I'd like to see that happen. You mean they could have done it all along? Well, according to the interview I had on my. I'll be right back.
Savage.
Oil's at record highs. We're at the mercy of speculators and nations that are not friendly to us. There's oil that can be used right here in the United States, but all we hear is that it would take 10 years for us to see any of it. 10 years. It makes you think just what can be done in that amount of time. After all, it didn't take 10 years for the Manhattan Project. Dwayne Lester has given it a lot of thought and has written an article on the All-American Blogger about it. Dwayne Lester, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Dr. Savage, it's a pleasure to talk with you today. Thank you for having me on your show.
Give us some background about your article.
What happened was, I keep hearing, I follow politics like everyone else, and I keep hearing the same mantra coming from the left about how we shouldn't do this because it will take 10 years. We shouldn't do this because it's going to take so long. And I started thinking about World War II, and I thought that didn't take 10 years, and that was worth fighting. And then I started thinking of a couple other different things. Even going back to the beginning of the country, the Revolutionary War, I believe that was worth fighting, and it didn't take 10 years. You know, there were so many things that we've done that were monumental that took less than 10 years. I couldn't comprehend how it could take that long to get oil out of the ground that we already own, that infrastructure is already there. It didn't make any sense to me. So I started looking back at things that were huge projects that took far less time, and I was surprised at what I found.
So what are the top five accomplishments in your opinion?
Well, the first one is a group of colonists organized and defeated the British Empire, which is no small feat in and of itself. We also built the Transcontinental Railroad, and that was in the 1800s, 1869. You know, we finished that. We built a railroad from Omaha to Sacramento in less than 10 years. Now, if we can do that and we can't build get oil out of the ground, something's seriously wrong. We also built Hoover Dam. In 1961, President Kennedy announced that we were going to put a man on the moon. 8 years later, we were there. Orville and Wilbur Wright, while they didn't build the first aircraft, they did learn to control it in less than 10 years. And that's going from building their own wind tunnels to everything. They designed how to fly a plane. They learned it in less than 10 years. Those are just five big things that we did in less time than the Democrats say it would take us to get oil out of the ground. It makes no sense.
Why is there this fixation on saying it will take 10 years when it would probably take less than that?
Well, I think it's got it has a psychological effect on the people. There's a lot of people who get their news in sound bites, and they don't take a lot of time to actually sit and digest it. And 10 years seems like a long time, which is really what opened my eyes to the fact that what they were talking about was outrageous. But most people will hear, 10 years, that is a long time. We need it right now. So they'll just accept the Democrats at their word and move on with what they're doing.
What kind of distances are we talking about in Anwar?
Well, if my research is correct, Anwar sits about 50 miles from Prudhoe Bay, and there's already infrastructure there that's available for use. Now, we could start drilling there and start using the infrastructure already in place in Prudhoe Bay just 50 miles away. And from what I understand, they're using about 40% of the capacity there. While we're using that, we could start building up more. We could build more infrastructure to support Anwar. There's plenty of stuff we could do, but instead we get this defeatist anti-American attitude from the Democrats. This attitude of theirs is not what America was built on. America wasn't built on the idea of, well, we shouldn't do that because it'll take too long. America was built on the idea of, let's get this done. Let's just get out of the way and make it happen, because that's what we do as Americans. We make things happen.
Let's say it does take 10 years. Common sense says we will still be needing oil then.
That's something else I'm pointing out, too. I mean, we're not just talking about the price of gas here. There are so many things that require oil to make things go. Our plastics are made with oil. Oil is a key part of our everyday lives. In 10 years, we're still going to require crude oil. And it's better that we get it out of our own resources than be, dependent on someone who doesn't have our best interests in mind. We're going to need it. Get it now so we can have it later when we still do need it.
Well, we've heard the first five on your list. Give us the next five.
One of the biggest ones came in at number six. We actually, in 1904, from 1904 to 1914, we built the Panama Canal. When you think about that, a lot of people don't understand what had happened prior to that. There's some who don't know the history. The French tried to build this canal before we did it, and they lost 22,000 men. 22,000 men died trying to build this canal for the French, and they failed. And then Teddy Roosevelt said, no, we need this. We're going to build it. And then he got it done in less than 10 years. We lost, in our efforts, we lost 5,000 men. Still 5,000 people died in 10 years. But we got it done, and we succeeded where others had failed, and we didn't sit back and say, oh, it would take too long, oh, it's not worth it. We said, this needs to get done. This is important to our national security. This is important to the future of America. This needs to happen. Let's get it done. In 10 years, we moved an incredible amount of material. It's unbelievable when you actually look at the effort there, what was done. It baffles your mind to think that we could do that, that we could build that canal across Panama, but we couldn't get oil out of the ground in Alaska. And like we said before, we won World War II in less than 10 years. We built the Empire State Building. We built the Golden Gate Bridge, and we built both towers of the World Trade Center in less than 10 years. Now, these are no small feats. These are all huge endeavors that Americans took on their own and made happen in less than 10 years. It's that kind of attitude that has built America. It's not the attitude you're seeing from the Democrats today, though.
Where has that attitude gone?
You know, I wish I knew. I think it's still alive on the right, but the left, it's almost as if they want to see this America brought down. It's almost as if they see America as this arrogant body, and they want us to be brought down to a level that they think we should be at, that they're trying to knock us down a size or two. It's unfortunate. I don't think that everyone on the left feels that way. I don't think every Democrat feels that way, but I think a majority of the influence makers are interested in seeing America brought down to size or cut down to size.
Do you see any changes in attitudes in America coming, or do you think we're still spiraling downward?
You know, on the left, they seem very interested in doing things that are not in America's best interest. And a lot of it stems from this environmental movement. We need energy in this country in the worst way. We need nuclear power plants. We need oil. And every effort we make to move forward is stopped by this environmental movement. And that all goes back to, you can trace this all back to certain figures like Maurice Strong, who in 1990s told a reporter that he was interested in seeing the collapse of industrialized civilizations, and then 2 years later helped craft Kyoto Protocol, which is doing nothing to stop the increase of carbon dioxide in the world, but is doing everything to punish rich countries through fines that go to poor countries. You see this, and you have to wonder, is this not a concerted effort by the left to bring America down? The only thing that can really help that is people on the right opening their eyes to the fact that this may actually be going on and they need to stop it.
Well, I've been trying to wake people up for years on the Savage Nation. What do you think we can wake up the American people with, or how?
You hear about the fairness doctrine and the attacks on talk radio, and that's a big part of it. Talk radio is a big catalyst for change. I know when I started getting into politics, you were one of the big influences I had. I listened to the Savage Nation. I listened to a lot of other shows and got my information that way. And then I started turning to the Internet. You're not going to see it through the mainstream media. You're not going to see, you know, Katie Couric talking about all the bad things going on the left, the downfall of America, unless she's celebrating it. But that change is going to have to come from the ground up. It's going to have to come from people taking an interest, finally saying, you know, I've had enough, and saying, no more. I'm going to learn about this, and we're going to make a change. It's going to have to start with the people.
Dwayne, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Michael, thank you for giving me the opportunity to talk to your listeners. I appreciate
Savage.
Your time.
With the media and tons of money blindly supporting Barack Hussein Obama, there isn't a lot of background about him or his backers coming out to be heard. Daniel Flynn, author of A Conservative History of the American Left, joins us today to talk about some of the people supporting Obama. Daniel Flynn, welcome to the Savage Nation.
Thank you, Michael. Thank you for having me.
Well, give us some background on these people.
Back in 1968, a lot of the leaders of SDS and a lot of the other radicals were, you know, they rioted at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago, and they urged young people not to vote. To vote in the streets is what they said, instead of voting in the ballot box. And it's ironic that in that election, because of their opposition to Hubert Humphrey, they cost the Democrats the White House. But now, if you fast forward 40 years later, these same people are some of Barack Obama's most enthusiastic supporters. And it's that support this time around that may cost Barack Obama the White House.
These Obama people, who are they?
Well, one of the fellow is a guy by the name of Mike Klonsky, and Klonsky was the leader of SDS in 1968. And his point, you know, when I talked to him last year, he said, you know, back then we thought we had to fight with Eugene McCarthy and these people. So SDS was not only opposed to Hubert Humphrey, but they were opposed to Eugene McCarthy, at least at the national level, and they were opposed to Bobby Kennedy. So it didn't matter who the Democratic nominee was. They were just intent on sort of crashing the party. Klonsky was so alienated from the system of American politics that in the 1970s he started a communist party, you know, sort of a splinter, a schismatic group from the regular communist party. And so it's a little bit odd that someone whose politics are so extreme that he would found a communist party and he would be so out there that he would be urging young people not to vote in 1968 and rioting at the convention, if 40 years later would be blogging on Barack Obama's campaign website. I think it would be news if a Nazi were blogging on John McCain's website, but a guy who founded a communist party blogging on Barack Obama's website, somehow that's not news.
Well, why isn't there more focus on these supporters?
Well, I think that this is being discussed on talk radio, it's being discussed on the internet, but a lot of the Barack Obama supporters and their radical ties is not being discussed in the mainstream media, and it's going to get discussed one way or the other. I mean, I think the point is that, you know, if Barack Obama doesn't separate himself from these people, a guy like Bill Ayers is going to be as Willie Horton, and Bill Ayers is a guy who not only has been a patron to Barack Obama over the years, but Barack Obama has been a patron to him, whether it's his wife organizing a speaking event for his book, or him sitting on the same board of trustees for a foundation out in Chicago, or Bill Ayers hosting a fundraiser at his house for Barack Obama. Bill Ayers is one of the weathermen terrorists who in the 1970s went on a bombing campaign on the Capitol and the Pentagon and a lot of law enforcement agencies around the country. Back then, Ayers, you know, very publicly said that young people should kill their parents. Bernadine Dorn, who he subsequently married, she praised the Manson family. She got up in front of a Weathermen meeting, praised what the Manson family had done, and even the Weathermen had adopted a split-fingered greeting to symbolize the fork that the Manson family had shoved in the stomach of Lena LaBianca, one of the victims of the Manson family. And so, I mean, if you couldn't think of two people you would not want to be your supporters. I mean, I'm sure Barack Obama would wish to trade these people to John McCain, but they are his supporters, and unlike the Reverend Wright, he hasn't come out and said, you know, it was a bad idea to associate with these people. I mean, this is a guy who wants to run the war on terror, and yet here he is for a long period of his life cavorting with people who were terrorists and who are unrepentant about their actions.
Why isn't Obama distancing himself from some of these people?
Well, I think the issue hasn't been raised loudly enough for him to do anything about it. I think probably Obama thinks that if he addresses this and he talks about the Bill Ayers of the world or Michael Klonsky, you know, blogging on his site, or the fact that Progressives for Obama, a group supporting him, is really just a who's who of the SDS of the 1960s, the Students for a Democratic Society. And so Barack Obama would rather just sort of ignore this, and a lot of the folks in the media are ignoring it with him, but it's going to come up, and it's going to keep coming up, and it's going to get louder and louder until he says something about it. Because after all, you know, Americans may not like the war, they may not like George W. Bush, but they don't want to have a president at a time when we're in a war on terrorism that is hanging out with actual terrorists, that has the support of people who are unrepentant about their actions in the 1970s. He needs to stand up and condemn those people, or condemn their actions, rather.
Do you think Obama's widespread support comes from people who just don't know what these radicals actually did?
Sure. I think that 40 years is a long time. And so Barack Obama, you know, not without justice, that he was 8 years old when the Weathermen embarked on their bombing campaign. So the fact that a guy like Mark Rudd, for instance, is a supporter of Barack Obama, progressive, you know, one of the progressives for Obama, people aren't going to know who Mark Rudd is. People aren't going to know that he was the leader of the group that shut down Columbia University in 1968. They're not going to know that his SDS group urged people to engage in sabotage rather than voting, and they mocked Bobby Kennedy and Eugene McCarthy as McKennedy, and said they were, you know, there was no difference between them and Lyndon Johnson. People don't have a sense of history, particularly people who were not alive at that time. So it is a task for people who are outraged about this to educate people that, hey, look, this is a major candidate for president, and he has folks supporting him who have never been in part of the political process, or at least haven't been part of the mainstream political process for a long time. And it raises questions. Well, why are people who were involved in communist parties in the 1970s, or who were involved in rioting at the Democratic National Convention in 1968, or who were involved in a Weatherman bombing campaign in the early 1970s, why are they so enthusiastic about Barack Obama? And these are some questions that Barack Obama has to answer.
Will this be a main focus before the general election?
Well, I think if the groundswell, if the, you know, if the media start talking about it, he's going to have no choice and address it. I have, you know, reading the tea leaves, I think that, you know, more so than Reverend Wright, people like Bernadine Dorn and Bill Ayers and some of these other extremists who have come out and supported his campaign, and also people that he's supported as well, this is going to be his swift boat. This is going to be his Willie Horton, unless he does something about it, unless he says, look, I don't want to have any part of these people. They may support me, but I don't support them. I think that's what he should come out and say, and that would be reassuring to people. But he hasn't said anything, and the fact that he hasn't said anything, you know, condemning the actions of some of his supporters is a little bit troubling. 40 years ago, the same people who are enthusiastically supporting Barack Obama's campaign today as progressives for Obama were rioting at the Democratic National Convention in Chicago. And the American people looked at what they did and they said, well, if the Democrats can't even run a convention, why should we entrust them to run the White House? Why should we entrust them to run the country? And so Hubert Humphrey lost by the slimmest of margins in that election in 1968. What's ironic is that then it was their opposition to the Democrats that cost them the White House. Now it may be their enthusiastic support that costs the Democrats and Barack Obama the White House, because people are going to look at some of the extremists supporting Barack Obama and say, hey, look, you know, if these are the people in Obama's camp, I don't want to have anything to do with it.
Daniel Flynn, thanks for being on the Savage Nation.
Hey, appreciate you having me on.
You know, people are trying to silence Michael Savage. That's me. I need your help. It's a big battle, a legal battle. The opposition has unlimited funds. I don't. Will you please go to michaelsavage.com? Contribute $5, $10, $1,000, $10,000. You'll notice that you can contribute to the Legal Defense Fund under a new address. The mail goes to the Michael Savage. That's if a check, a money order, cash. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111. Thank you for helping protect freedom of speech. Michael Savage Legal Fund, 4 Embarcadero Center, 39th floor, San Francisco 94111, and God bless you for helping protect freedom of speech.
Savage.
It is.
We must create more jobs for Americans and for our neighbors to the south. With better jobs, more of them will be able to stay in their country. We can't go back on our word on free trade promises with Mexico, Canada, Central America, or anyone else. We must encourage more trade agreements to create more jobs on both sides of the border. That's why I'm behind the Colombian Free Trade Agreement.
All right, turn them off. Turn it like a broken bad record. Who makes these things up? Which drunk is running John McCain's? You know, McCain could win by 10 to 20 points if he only understood that he only had to be himself and not be a wishy-washy flounder and sound more and more like George Bush as the election emerges. It seems to me that he's being sabotaged from within. There has to be several Judases. I knew I was right 6 months ago when I said McCain has a Judas in his camp. In fact, the Judas quit 2 months ago saying he would not run against Obama. But now there are other Judases. Now, why would John McCain choose to go to Colombia today and talk about more free trade deals when Americans at the lower end of the economic ladder are reeling from the loss of jobs? Other than he's a moron who's being advised by bigger idiots who are Brutuses. So what can I say to you? You want to hear this again with that sappy music like it was created for idiots? Listen, start it again.
In our economy, we must create more jobs for Americans and for our neighbors to the south. With better jobs, more of them will be able to stay in their country. We can't go back on our word on free trade promises
now,
with Mexico.
Stop. We know free trade is a lie. We know there is no such thing as a free lunch, and we also know there's no such thing as free trade. There are tariffs on American products in all of these South American countries. There are tariffs on American products when you try to send them to Mexico. You try. I mean, my family has a business that is international. So don't think I'm just talking in the air. You try to export an American product into the European Union. You try to export a product into Mexico. You try to export a product into Colombia. He is lying through his teeth, or he's a moron, dunce. The fact of the matter is, it's not free trade, it's unfair trade, and to continue along these lines is utter absurdity. The opposite is necessary right now. We have to rip up NAFTA. We have to reevaluate every trade deal on the table because, as you well know, we're losing our auto industry. What is left to sell off out of this country after Bush gets through with us? 1-800-449-8255. You know, I was going to come back in this segment and say to you, Obama's starting to look bad. He's starting to show a little wear around the edges. He's not as cocky as he was 2 months ago because people are on to his, he got a cheap mortgage. He's waffled on every issue. He's starting to look like the scared kid that he really is. He is. He looks like, to me, a scared kid who's way over his head, who pushed himself this far with phenomenal advantage because he owned the media. The media was in love with him because they're all liberal slash socialist slash communist slash anarchist. And so they love this guy because he represents all of their lack of American values. And he's starting to show it. I mean, as I was saying, the guy is starting to look pretty bad. And McCain was starting to look better. But when you listen to McCain talking about more free trade agreements, it doesn't get any worse than this. You want to hear it gets worse? Here, listen to clip 19 now.
I will be president of everyone. I will not be a president just of Republicans or anyone else. I will represent everybody because this nation is in difficult
times.
Let's
stop right there. Wait, no, keep going. It gets worse. Listen to Dick now. The wheels are now in the mud, and they're spinning. Go ahead.
I want to assure you that I will reach across the aisle, as I have done in my past career, and reach out my hand to the Democrats, and I will work together with them as I have in the past.
No, we know that. That's your problem. That's your problem with conservatives, is because you've reached out across the aisle to the Democrats and the Mexican government and the Colombian government, but you won't reach out across the aisle to the base that could really elect you, which is the conservative base, John. So, you know, you are running the worst campaign in American history, a man who has all the advantages, not because you yourself are so great, but because your competitor is so bad. That's the reason. I never saw anything like this. The guy looks to me like a fall guy for the Republican Party. I've long suspected that the power structure does not want another Republican running this country. The way the game is played, I told you this a long time ago, to the best of my understanding, is that for X number of years, one party runs it into the ground, robs as much as they can without going to prison. Well, let's say a few of them went. Then they throw it to the other party. And then the other party takes office and the other side brays from the sidelines. Oh, foul ball, we'll do better. Then they let them rape the Treasury for about 4 to 8 years and they scream, oh, blah, 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 blah. So in other words, because Bush has so screwed things up financially, they have to raise taxes. Now, the Republicans can't come into power and raise taxes, can they? There'll be no party left. As it is, there's very little of a party left. So they want Obama to win. So they put up a fall guy like this old sad sack McCain, despite his heroism, despite the fact that he has done his service for the country. I mean, you got to admit that as a senator, he's been just as bad as they get. He has been a collaborator with Ted Kennedy on too many policies. There's no other way to put it. He can be led around by his nose. He's a get along, go along kind of, you know, backslapping guy. That's the last thing we need right now. So here we are. Here we're sitting in sort of suspended animation. The opposition to him is beyond thought, the Obama camp. It's not just Obama. He himself is questionable, but the people around him are the people you have to worry about. It's not the candidates so much. It's the people who he would have to use in government and what effects they would have on your life. Do you understand what I just said to you? You have no idea who Obama might pick to be the Secretary of the Treasury or the Secretary of the Interior or the Secretary, for example, that he put in the Department of Justice, the Attorney General. Who might he pick? Who could he pick to be the Attorney General, the head of the ACLU? How would you like to wake up one day and see that pockmarked pervert running the country's judicial system? And why it's not possible with Obama? Why don't you ask him who he'd appoint? That's far more important. Ask him who his judges would be. Would it be the pornographic judge here in San Francisco? The porno judge? Would he put him on the Supreme Court? Or somebody worse? Ask yourself. These are the issues, really. So it's not just the candidate, but it's the people, all the president's men, so to speak, that you have to ask yourself who would appear on the horizon. So it's McCain's election to lose, and by God, he is losing it. Why did he go to Colombia and talk about expanding free trade? Unless the man is so dense that he doesn't understand it's the dumbest thing he ever could have done at this time. You follow what I'm just saying to you? The dumbest possible thing he could do would be to have gone to Colombia now. Talk about more free trade. Listen, play the sappy music again. You got to hear this.
To fuel our economy, we must create more jobs for Americans and for our neighbors to the south. With better jobs, more
okay, look, we don't care about our neighbors to the south very much anymore. Stop telling us about our neighbors to the south. Who, Hugo Chavez is our neighbor to the south? What neighbors to the south? All they want to do is come here and rob us blind. Don't tell us about neighbors south. They hate the Norte Americano, you lunatic, you. God in heaven. You see, there's no chance for an independent to win. Don't you understand? You've asked me for years. Why don't you run for office? First of all, I wouldn't have a ghost of a chance. Oh, I could be a spoiler. I could pull 10 to 20 million votes out of McCain's camp and really destroy the whole Republican Party if I wanted to. But I don't want to do that. That's not my goal in life. And I don't want to just be a spoiler. I'm not in it just for fun here. The country is what I care about. So I care about the country well enough to never have entered the political arena. I do not want to be a congressman. I do not want to be a senator. I want to be a talk show host for a number of reasons. I think I can have a more positive influence on the direction of policy right here on the Savage Nation than I could being a junior congressman or a junior senator. Can you imagine being a junior senator to Barbara Boxer? Can you imagine being a junior congressman to one of those characters on the far left? And you have everything's about like rank and how long you've been there and having to – you want your bill passed. You want your suits pressed. You want to get into the congressional swimming pool. Well, look, Mike, the way it works is you have to vote with us. That's not my nature. I'm not a compromiser. I don't know how to do it. I mean, if I have to, I will, obviously, but I don't want to put myself in a position where I have to. You understand what I just said to you? Any man will compromise if he has to survive. It's human nature. But you try not to put yourself in a position where you have to compromise. If a great big guy comes along and he wants to wring your neck, you'll do anything you can to avoid having your neck wrung. Okay, it's the same thing in Congress. If you're a junior congressman, you're going to get your neck wrung unless you go along with guys like Jack Murtha, the biggest pork barrel recipient in the history of the Congress and the biggest persecutor of the U.S. Marines all at the same time. How does he get away with it? How? They own the system. Now, let's come back to the issue here. I believe that McCain was set up by the Republican Party to lose. If they had run Mr. Romney, Romney would have won by a margin of 25 points against Obama. Younger, glib, he was untouchable. How did he lose all of a sudden overnight when he suddenly lost the primary as if by magic? Something went on in that room in one of the southeastern states where Romney walked out a loser and McCain walked out a winner. And in the early polling, Romney was winning. Then all of a sudden, Romney was dropped like a hot potato. How did that happen and why did it happen? They did not want to win this election. Well, that's one of the theories that I've been working with for quite a while. And the more McCain speaks, the more it looks to me like he's trying to drive his potential career for president off the road, because nobody could do a better job than him, as exemplified by him going to Colombia and demanding more free trade rather than less. This is the Savage Nation. Be here or be nowhere.
Savage.